In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Who is the most well-known person in your hometown? From SDPB, today is Tuesday, August 6th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we'll talk about what it means to be teacher famous. Jackie Wilbur and Gina Benz join us to talk about getting comfortable being known. And we called in a ringer for the conversation. South Dakota teacher Gabe Dannenbring has 2 million online followers. We'll talk with him about fame, leadership, and education. We've also got a South Dakota small town making noise on social media for a good cause. Bryant, South Dakota needs a new park. And it's going to take the entire state to bring the project over the finish line. All we have to do is vote. We'll also dive deep into the fossil research of Wind Cave, and we'll learn about another project from the Sinew Fund. We're broadcasting live today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. A three-year research project at Wind Cave National Park seeks to unearth secrets from the park's fossil record. Researchers will compare the animals of the past and present to better understand the future of the park's fauna as the climate changes. Rachel Short is an assistant professor at South Dakota State University. Nate Fox is the associate director of the Museum of Geology at the School of Mines, and they are joining us from SDPB's Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Dr. Short, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Nate, thank you for being here as well.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
All right. This is, I want to get to the genesis of the collaboration. How did you two meet and realize that you have some research and some questions that might be worth, pursuing together through a National Science Foundation project grant?
Yeah, so it's kind of a long story, but I'll take the short way. Okay. So we actually did our master's degrees together years ago.
Oh, nice.
So we've been friends for over a decade at this point.
Yep.
And then we went our separate ways during our dissertations and ended up back here in Rapid City together. And so we started talking about where our research interests overlapped, and it was just a natural collaboration at that point.
All right, so let's talk about some of the research questions that you're hoping to find out through studying the fossil record. What are some of the big question marks? Nate, you start, and then Rachel, you follow up, please.
I'll actually let Rachel take the questions. She'll do
Got
the technical
it.
Aspect, and I'll do the sort of hands-on exhibits and museum part, if that's okay.
I understand.
Yeah, so the big picture idea is to understand how animals are reflecting the environment that they live in. So we look at the shapes of the fossils and how those shapes are related to things like precipitation or vegetation cover, and we can get the sequence through time of how the animals and the environment have changed together.
So help me understand how the research works. This is stuff that's already in these are artifacts that are already in the museum.
Yep. So we picked four fossil sites that are within the boundary of Wind Cave National Park, and they are already housed at the Museum of Geology. Nate has had some students working on putting ID numbers on them and getting them ready for us to study.
All right. And then eventually there'll be some sort of presentation of this, the findings. Nate, what do you want to tell us about that to look forward to, even though it's a little early to be talking about that part of it? But there is a plan.
Sure. Yep. So we're going to convey the results of this project into a public exhibit at the Museum of Geology that'll basically communicate the findings in a non-technical way for the public so they can all learn from this project.
All right. Let's get a little technical. Rachel, ecometrics. Help us understand looking at functional traits, looking at and inferring things.
Sure.
Give us the 101. Yeah.
Yeah. Ecometrics is a fancy word that means just looking at the shape of the bones and what it tells us. So I study ankle bones, and the shape of the ankle bones tells us if the animal was walking in a grassland or a forest or a desert. So we can kind of reconstruct the vegetation based on the shape of that ankle bone. We can do a similar thing with the shape and size of teeth. It will tell us how dry the plant material is that the animal was eating, and so what precipitation was like. So it's really just how those shapes of teeth and bones are related to the environment and how we can interpret that. It's kind of a long-lasting record of the environment.
So why Wind Cave National Park? Why this area? What's rich there?
The fossil record. It is really important to have these four sites lined up through time, right? So they all occur in the same geographic boundary in the park, but they occurred at different times. And so we can line them up and create this temporal sequence of change.
It's very rare to have such a complete fossil record from the last million years of Earth's history.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because what I'm wondering is what we already know and then where the gaps are in the scientific knowledge.
Yeah, so there's been quite a bit of work done on the sites individually and describing what animals lived in these locations at a certain time. But we haven't really tied them together yet, and we haven't looked at the traits yet. It's been a lot of lists of species occurring together. So we're going to add the traits in and tie these sites together.
How small is an ankle bone in some of these fossil records? That seems like it could be really tiny.
It can be really tiny. So most of my work has been on the hoofed mammals, so things like bison or pronghorn. They're a little bigger. Nate specializes in rodents, and so those are going to be real tiny.
Yeah, you can get down to a millimeter or two for an ankle bone of a rodent.
How do you look at things anew, Nate? When you're coming back to some research that maybe another scientist has laid out, or there is something that maybe you've seen dozens of times, and now you want to look at it in a fresh way. How do you do that scientifically? Yeah. Like, how do you switch your mind?
That's a great question. You know, there's so many opportunities for discovery in museum collections that are just sitting there that go, you know, undetected for decades or, you know, even centuries sometimes. And it all just depends on the question you're asking and the sort of lens that you're viewing the fossils in. So, you know, what could be mundane for one person, you know, could be groundbreaking to another person. It just depends how you look at it.
And then the science for science sake and the fact that we want to understand our history more, we want to understand our and the place that we live more, but also we're looking for practical solution sorts of scientific discoveries that help us impact the future. And that's where we get into this idea of man-made climate change and how this knowledge might have an impact on species extension, for example. Help me understand the potential of this kind of project.
Yeah, this has become a really big thing in our field right now, is how do we use the fossil record to impact, you know, day-to-day lives or the future? And it's become a subdiscipline maybe called conservation paleobiology. And that just means using this long-term record to get this better understanding of natural change. Then using climate projections of what the climate will look like in the future, what the environment might look like, we can then estimate what the fauna might look like that live there, which groups of animals would do well if the climate changes in a certain way. And that kind of lets us anticipate rather than react.
Nate, tell me about a rodent in Wind Cave. Tell me about some. Introduce me to somebody.
Oh, wow. Decisions. Well, I think one of the most common fossils that we find is Paramiscus, a deer mouse. They become very common towards the end of the last ice age and into the recent period known as the Holocene. So they're probably the most abundant rodent that you'll see there. And finding Paramiscus in the fossil record can sometimes be, you know, a good indicator of where you are in time, and depending on the species, where you are environmentally. You know, some of these species prefer more forested environments, some prefer more open environments. So off the top of my head, there you go, Paramiscus.
Are there new discoveries being made? We had a conversation with the Badlands park ranger about, you know, citizen science and when you find something, leaving it there and documenting and coming back and talking to the rangers about what you maybe think you discovered. Don't take anything from the park. Does that apply to your work as well? What are some of the discoveries that you hope might still be anew?
So, first of all, the Museum of Geology is a major federal repository. So we house a lot of fossils from Wind Cave National Park, Badlands National Park, all kinds of different federal agencies. And a big thing that we want to communicate, you know, as a museum to the public is the importance of fossil conservation, of, you know, leaving things where you find it and documenting it to park rangers. So I'm hoping that, you know, with this exhibit and some of the other outreach programming that we're going to do with this project, we can convey that information a little better and why it's important, you know, to leave fossils where they are and to document them in their original context for the purposes of scientific discovery.
Yeah. So much here to talk about. Congratulations on the grant. This is a really exciting project. We hope to come and follow it more in the days ahead. But for now, Rachel Short and Nate Fox, thank you so much for giving us this introduction.
Thanks so much for having
Thanks for having us.
The town of Bryant, South Dakota, is undertaking a big project redoing their city park. Now, the town has fewer than 500 residents, but their park improvement project is in the running for a $50,000 grant. Krista Prouty and Christy Sinkink are joining us from SDPB's Janine Basinger Studio at South Dakota State University in Brookings to talk about how the whole state can get behind and vote for the Bryant up-and-coming committee. Krista, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thank you, Lori. We're so happy to be here.
Christy, welcome as well.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Krista, tell us a little bit about Bryant, South Dakota, because there are a lot of newcomers, people moving in, the town is changing and growing, and it's a great place to live. Tell me about Bryant.
Yes, Bryant, great place to live. We were just talking here today that it's somewhere where everybody will know your name and you'll always get a wave, that small town feel. We have several businesses on Main Street, bakery, a bar and grill, bank. We have a movie theater that's actually been there for over 100 years and has been community ran for 25 years, Totally volunteers. We have a pool and then, of course, our beautiful park that we're trying to refinish and make modern and up to date for everybody to enjoy.
What's showing at the movie theater?
This weekend is Inside Out 2, I believe. So, yes, family-friendly movie. So come on over to Bryant. Tickets are $4.
This is one of my favorite things when I travel. I always look for the movie theater, and people don't think of that as like a tourism visitor thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I love to go to a movie theater in a town and sort of see what it's like. So it's super cool. Yes. All right. So tell me a little bit about this this grant and the voting. Christy, catch us up with what exactly is happening. I also want to talk about how you got this far, too, and the people that are involved in it. But what are the things you want people to know about voting for your project?
Well, in order to turn our $10,000 into $50,000, we need you to vote. It will determine the winner. And we are up against Green Bay, Wisconsin, in the choice of projects. So there were two states chosen out of the Midwest, and South Dakota has never been recognized for this Kubota hometown grant.
Wait a minute. So Bryant, South Dakota against Green Bay, Wisconsin. That doesn't seem fair.
Right?
Population-wise.
Right? Yeah. You know, 100,000 people to 456, you know? So it's right. Extremely important, yeah, as I said, to vote, you know, for the project. It will allow us to build a picnic pavilion within our park and to place some shade structures around our park as well. We removed within the community about 150 ash trees. So sure. We need some protection, you know, in our park, but also just the aesthetics of it. You have families that, you know, they gather. And it's free. You know, a park is always free. So you can have a family picnic, a dinner, a birthday party celebration. So in order to facilitate that, to have a picnic pavilion would be pretty remarkable.
Krista, the power of a park in a community, of a public, here we are in public radio talking about a public park. Talk a little bit about the importance of just having that place that, you know, that, yeah, isn't fee-based, that isn't, and you guys have raised a ton of money, you know, independently. So what would this boost do for the park in Bryant?
You know, I think the boost has already, you know, already happened. I mean, it's exciting. We've seen our community and surrounding communities and people outside of our county supporting us. And I think that's a win in itself when you're just promoting small towns. But this park specifically would, you know, be a place to gather, kind of like Christy said, and somewhere that we can all come together as a community, positivity, and something that is kind of cool as of today for our votes. You know, we have 3,462 votes, and Green Bay has 911. So I think that in itself shows the support of, you know, small-town people supporting other small-town people. And so we want to keep that momentum going for people voting to keep us up on top because, you know, 100,000 versus 456, you know, some people could be intimidated by that. But our amazing group and our board was, let's go for it. Let's go without a bang here to do as much as we can.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the conversations that you have had as a cohort as you talk about the importance of a small town and the importance of telling other small towns, like, you know, we see you, this could be you, this is what we're doing here, this is how we're responding here. What have some of those conversations between, you know, the women who are gathered around raising money and coming up with ideas, what's that been like, Krista?
Absolutely. So even we had a fundraiser here back in February, and of course we needed donations, and we did a meal and everything like that. And it was a conversation, okay, how is this going to work? Are we going to be able to pull it off? Are we going to be able to do it? And Lori, we raised $40,000 in one evening for our park. Yes, wow. for our park, for Bryant there. And we talked about this being like a spark for other small communities where if a woman of women that are, you know, moms, grandmas that own their own businesses have, you know, grew up in Bryant, moved away and came back. If us eight can pull something like this off with the support of our, you know, city, the community members and that kind of stuff, anybody can do it. And so I think this is something that other towns can take as motivation, that if the little town of Bryant can pull something like this off, our town can too. And I think that's something that spreads positivity and unity, and something just as small towns can kind of come together. Our phrase has kind of been small town proud. So doesn't matter, you know, what town you are in South Dakota or even, you know, the nation. Anybody in the nation can vote for us. So everybody can relate to a small town. Everybody knows somebody from somewhere, and you'll always have a connection. And especially in South Dakota, that's true.
To that end, the first gentleman came to your aid and is talking about supporting Bryant as well. So, Christy, talk a little bit about social media, your Facebook, Bryant Upcoming presence, and just how many people have taken the hashtag around the state and around the country to raise awareness for small town South Dakota.
Yeah. You know, in order to keep up with the times, you kind of got to accept what's going on. And as much as people don't maybe want social media or, you know, feel the negativity of it, it surely can be positive and powerful. We created a platform on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and Krista has been instrumental in putting our videos together and putting them out there of, you know, local people, some local events, and, you know, just sharing it, asking people to share it, asking people to, you know, watch and listen, and at the end of the day, go vote. But yeah, it's been also exciting. Fun, I think, to talk to people about it. You know, we've got some postcards and some flyers and things around, and that's been fun, just to talk to people and engage them, you know, in voting, regardless of, like I said, what platform they're on.
Yeah. Krista, wrap us up with what you want people to know and do today here, how long the voting is going on, and what's at stake.
You bet. So share our story. You know, you can like all of our social media platforms, but the biggest thing, Lori, is going to be voting for Bryant. So you can go to KubotaHometownProud.com. Then you click the Midwest region, and you're going to scroll down, and we want you to choose Bryant, of course. You enter in your email and your name, and then a link's going to be sent to verify your email. And then you just make sure to click enter again, and there'll be a thank you for voting. And you can vote every day now through August 14th. So every email in your household can vote as long as they're 18 years or above. Anyone in the nation can vote. So just everybody get out there and vote for Bryant. We'd sure appreciate your vote.
Leaders from Bryant, South Dakota, Krista Prouty and Christy Sinkink, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for sharing your story.
We're going to talk more about the power of social media with someone who has 2 million followers on TikTok, a South Dakota teacher. Teacher Talk is up next on listener-supported SDPB.
Education reporting on SDPB is supported by Architecture Incorporated, advocates for education.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Think for a moment about the most well-known person in your hometown. It might be one of your school district's most influential teachers or coaches. For today's Teacher Talk, Jackie Wilbur and Gina Benz talk about what it means to be teacher famous. To help us get that conversation to the next level, we invited the most famous South Dakota teacher we know to join us as a guest. Gabe Dannenbring is a middle school teacher in the Sioux Falls School District, and he's actually famous, like 2 million followers online famous. All three teachers joined me in the SDPB Kirby Family Studio for a conversation about getting comfortable being known. Gina Benz is a recipient of the Milken Educator Award. She's in her 25th year of teaching, and she has helped the next generation of educators find their way through the Teacher Pathway Program. Jackie Wilbur is on the faculty of the University of South Dakota and director of the Center for Student and Professional Services in the School of Education. Let's begin with why Dr. Wilbur wanted to talk about the fame of teaching.
Well, I wrote in the blog and experienced an incident in the grocery store not too long ago where I heard a young boy shout just kind of at the top of his lungs, like, "Grandma, come here. It's my teacher. Come take my picture with her." And so I see this grandma behind her grandson not too far away, and she just smiles at the teacher and says, "We've heard a lot about you and our family," and got ready to take their picture. And so I guess I personally am not famous. I don't know what that is like, but to me, that's an element of fame, is that people are coming up to you and asking to take your picture and bragging to their family members that they know who you are. And so I think teachers experience that. And like you said, I do know that a little bit from my dad being a teacher for most of my life. He was a head boys basketball coach and a teacher. And so he was in the newspaper, on the radio, on TV. And so as a young person growing up, that felt famous to me.
Yeah. Did you like that, or was that hard for you? How did that change?
Yes and no. I think, yes, for the most part I did. It was fun to go places and have people know who he was and come talk to him about the basketball game and, you know, that kind of a thing. And I always enjoyed that. And then there were times where people were critical, or the comments in the paper or on TV about how the game went or about his coaching would not be positive. And then as I got older, if people were cut from the basketball team or had opinions about things like that, that was also challenging. So I think it's just a matter of being comfortable being known. And I think all teachers experience that. And so it was a good profession for me to go into, because I was already aware that that was part of the profession, is that in my community, people would know who I was. Yeah.
Being comfortable being known. Mm-hmm. That's part of the human experience, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, Jackie, I have a quick question. Was there pressure for you? Because your dad was known, did you feel like you had to behave a certain way or be a certain person? Because that's what I worry about for my own children as they've come through the high school where I teach. I wonder, do they have a certain extra amount of pressure that other kids don't have?
People seem to be cognizant of that at the time. Like, my teachers would ask me those kinds of questions when I was growing up. And I honestly felt like it was beneficial to me. I liked having people know who I was before I got there. Like, "Oh, is your dad so-and-so?" And I liked that. And so I think it was also part of my nature. I liked doing well in school. I liked all of those elements. So I think if maybe my personality had been different, that would not be my experience, but because I liked school so much, it seemed only like a benefit to me.
That makes sense.
Gina, are you famous? Jackie says you're famous.
Yes, because I do think you're famous.
When she goes around with
West
you.
Side Sioux Falls famous.
That counts. That counts.
People stop and know you.
It's true. My daughter will say that that happens a lot. If we go to a coffee shop, there'll be a few people who know me. Or if I'm going to go to the local grocery store, I got to keep in mind I might see some parents or some students. And so there is that. But there's much more famous people.
And speaking of, yes. We should introduce our very first Teacher Talk guest, who is not just teacher famous, but who's famous, Gabe Dannenbring. How do you explain this kind of famous? Tell me how would you define fame?
Yeah. So I always tell people that you're not famous until you need a bodyguard. So I'm not at bodyguard level of fame. I think that's when famous is. I'm at the level of quote unquote fame where somebody will stop me in an airport and say, hey, I've seen your videos, love your videos. Or, different places kind of. Now it's been throughout the world, which has been crazy. Two years ago, I was in Italy and two people stopped me. One was at the Vatican City and I was like, wow, this is crazy. And the other was at this little ice cream parlor. And the gal that followed me didn't want to approach me and say anything. So she told her husband, hey, the person in there, like, I follow him on TikTok. He's a teacher. So he's like, oh, I'm gonna go say hi. And he went to my father-in-law instead of up to me, said, are you the teacher? And he's like, no, but Gabe is over there. But I'm far from famous. I've just been extremely lucky with social media and, you know, grown my online platforms to over 2 million followers, which is super cool, and been doing a lot of things that's in TV, whether it's some political things, talking about education on News Nation or stuff on Fox News, or I was in a reality show on Netflix, which was super interesting to be a part of. And yeah, it's crazy to see the reach that social media has. Like this week alone, I was looking at my accounts and realizing in 7 days I've reached, I think it was 25 million people in just a couple of videos. Mm-hmm. So there's that level of, not, I wouldn't call it fame, but recognition. And there's pressure with that. And there's also the pressure of the fame as a teacher. And much to what you're talking about, Jackie, my dad was a coach. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, don't screw up in the public because I know what people will say about our family. That there's that level of, if I screw up and it looks bad in the community, people are going to come for my family and say bad things about my family. I think a lot of kids of teachers and kids of coaches definitely feel that.
Yeah. Let's talk about how you got into teaching, because this isn't just TikTok. It's about education. Mm-hmm. And how did you become a teacher here in South Dakota?
Yeah. I had no business getting my first job in South Dakota. So I went to school in Moorhead, Minnesota. Loved the Fargo-Moorhead area. It was awesome. Student taught at a high school up there. Worked in the school districts when I was a freshman in college. Got into them, really enjoyed it, working as a sub, working in the AVID program. And then I ended up getting done with student teaching. And then I was kind of just a full-time in-house sub at one of the high schools in Fargo. And then one day, COVID hits. And I remember sitting in class and we started getting the emails of, hey, track is going to be postponed indefinitely, because I was a track coach at the time. Mm-hmm. And then we got the email, hey, it's going to be a long weekend. And that was the last time that I taught in North Dakota was that time. And then I moved home and I had no...
Home is
Yankton. Yes, sorry. Home is Yankton. So I moved home to Yankton, living in my parents' basement, not knowing what was up and down, and applied for all these jobs and nobody was really hiring because there were so many questions with COVID. Mm-hmm. And then I applied for a job in Sioux Falls on a whim, not thinking there was a chance that I was going to get it. And then I got the job, and here we are 5 years later now in the Sioux Falls School District, and I've just loved it, really loved it.
Jackie, I want to ask you about this idea of influence, because this is influence on a very large scale. But we've talked so much on Teacher Talk about the influence that you have on people's lives that you can't measure. Mm-hmm. Is there something really beautiful and wonderful about being able to measure it? Did you long for that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's so powerful how you have this instant feedback, Gabe, of what people's reaction is to you. And it's been so joyous, and you've had, I think, just like a tremendous amount of or at least that's the perception I've been seeing from where I'm sitting, that people are really supportive of the work that you're doing, and I think rightfully so. And yeah, I think sometimes teaching can be, I don't want to use the word isolating, but that might be the closest to what I'm thinking of. You don't always get feedback until sometimes years later, where a student will reach out and say, actually, this thing you did when I was a sophomore and now I'm 24 really had made a difference. Probably because they didn't know at the time that it was making a difference. It's a delayed reaction.
On social media, it's so easy to look at data and say, okay, this was successful. Like I look at a video and say, okay, I got X amount of views, X amount of comments, likes, whatever. That was successful. Teaching, it's so hard to do that. How do you put into a table and into a pie chart a successful teacher? And people will look at, well, they'll say, well, it's test scores. Well, we all know there's way more to a successful teacher than just test scores. A lot of successful teachers, it's how do they make their students feel? You can't put that into a graph. There's no way to graph that. So it's bumping into that student at the grocery store 5 years after you have them in class and they say, hey, I loved your class. That's where you feel that success. And so many of the people that we have impact with as teachers, they'll never come up and tell us that. They won't. And you have to be able to live with that as a teacher, that you won't be able to look at data that shows I am a successful teacher because of X, Y, and Z. That's just not how education works.
So what I want to ask you is, when you can look at that data and you have it so available to you, and then you can adjust the videos depending on what your goal is to that data, how does that impact you in the classroom? Are you in front of those students when they're looking at you thinking, I wish there was a little button they could push like or they could follow? What are the ways, and I'll ask you this too, Gina, that you are actually getting that kind of real-time data from the human interaction in a classroom?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think one of the ways is just to simply ask. You ask the students, hey, how are things going? How am I doing at my job? And if you have that rapport that's already built up in the classroom, then students are much more willing to say, hey, you know what? You did a really good job on Wednesday. Tuesday wasn't your best day. That was not a very good lesson. And I think as teachers, we appreciate that honesty from students. And with the day, with my day-to-day of social media, always looking at how many likes do I get, comments, shares, that's a way of people showing me, I like what you did. This is awesome. It's good. Teaching, it's really hard to have that. So you just have to communicate and ask. And I don't know, what do you all think?
I do that too. I love to sit the students down after a unit is done and say, what went well? What should I work on for next year? Because I want to be a better teacher for the future students. And doing it face-to-face, not through some anonymous survey, has been really powerful because the students give awesome feedback. And it makes me a better teacher and models for them that it's important to be able to receive feedback because it makes you better in life. I also really read body language. I think all teachers do. We aren't just in our mode of talking about the topic. We are watching the body language of everybody in the room and gauging, do we need to go a different direction with this lesson, keep doing what we're doing. And so when I watch the body language, if students are engaged, they're not distracted by other things, they are engaged, they're with me, that's a huge measure for me.
Yeah. Another commonality I think would be not having a lot of time to get somebody's attention. How do you on social media, and then we'll talk about in the classroom, get and keep somebody's attention for the message / lesson that you want to impart?
So on social media, it's so interesting because I can look at when people stop viewing my videos. When is the most engagement on my videos? When do people leave the video? What parts do people rewind it? And you have to catch them immediately. And for me, most of my videos start off with camera on me, and I say, here's a day in the life of a teacher, or here's how different teachers act when fill in the blank. So that is trying to catch them right away. And there's going to be a big percentage of people that they don't care at all what teachers do on a Friday. That's fine. You won't tune into my video then. But there is also a big chunk of people that they do want to know, what are teachers doing on a Friday morning? Well, what does that look like? Or how do different teachers act if there's a fire drill? And then having that as a catchy hook is huge. And that's the same thing within the classroom. You got to have a hook. You got to catch them right away because it's really easy to lose an audience. And it's really hard to get that audience back. It's very, very challenging, especially as an entertainer, as well as a teacher.
Being an entertainer and being a teacher, putting those two words together for some teachers, that will put them off and say, well, I'm not an entertainer, I'm a teacher. But yet we can all relate to being engaging and holding on to a classroom. Jackie, when you think about gaining a classroom's attention and keeping it so they retain the information, what are some of the ways that you teach future teachers to embrace that through their own personalities, for starters, mm-hmm. but also through best practices?
Yes, absolutely. I do think I've never really thought about how being a strong social media influencer and being a teacher parallel so well, but you're absolutely right that you I wouldn't call teachers entertainers, but you have to be fairly entertaining or you're mm-hmm. not going to keep their attention for very long. And while you don't get the analytics that social media provides of this is when people stopped watching my videos, you do get real-time feedback from students of when they visibly shut off from you or start talking to their friend or, you know, mm-hmm. being distracted in various other ways. And so I think having that good sense of reading the room and not being so caught up in your own thoughts that you can't react to the children that are in front of you and respond in real time to how they're thinking and feeling and reacting. That's a very good way to be quote unquote entertaining, but mostly because it's showing them I'm paying attention to you. I'm paying attention to how this lesson is landing and making you feel, and I'm adjusting so that way you can learn best, because that's what we're here to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gina, what would you add to that?
I think that the important thing is that you just have to be willing to geek out in whatever makes you, right?
Yeah.
So being an entertainer, you know, for me, I don't think I'm an entertainer, but I do geek out about the whole mindfulness yoga side of my personality. Mm. And the kids love that. Thank you, Jackie, for teaching me a lot about that. Yeah. And so I'm not humorous. I'm not storytelling like Jackie's dad always did. Instead, they know that they're going to come into my room and it'll be calm. And the world will slow down for a little bit, and we'll get to do some deep introspective thinking, and we'll communicate with each other face to face. So you just got to geek out about whatever it is that you geek out about, and kids respect that.
Yeah. People love what other people are passionate about. That's a thing that really does captivate an audience. I remember when I was teaching sixth grade earth science, I had to get kids fired up to learn about rocks. Yes. If you ever try to get a 12-year-old boy yes. fired up to learn about a rock, it's not easy. So you have to put on this show of, uh-huh. guys, we're learning about rocks today. This is awesome.
Yep,
this is a rock. And then that's what kind of gets them going. And I think one of the things that I struggle with as a teacher, and I think other teachers feel the same pressure, is we hear all the time, okay, make your lessons engaging. Make them engaging. Well, what makes an engaging lesson? A lot of times is it's entertaining. It's mm-hmm. interesting to watch. And then I compare it to these late night shows that are on TV. Mm-hmm. There's so many of these late night shows that are on TV that they have tables full of the best writers on the planet mm-hmm. trying to make it engaging, trying to make it fun. And they can only do a couple shows each week. And there's a lot of duds. A lot of them are not mm-hmm, very engaging. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are not very entertaining. I sometimes will just start scrolling through TikTok or changing the channel. And that's how teachers feel, is that they feel like it's each lesson has to be this home run smash hit. It doesn't have to be. It's mm-hmm. impossible. The mm-hmm. best writers on the planet cannot do that yeah. on a show that's strictly there to be entertaining. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you won't always have that engaging lesson. And I've also told my students that, listen, I need you for 15 minutes to get through this. Mm-hmm. This is a hard chunk of whatever we're learning. It's not super interesting, but buy in for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that helps me a lot. And really just telling them, this isn't going to be something that's so fascinating to you, but you still got to learn it, and just buy in for a little bit. A
couple of things that I loved is the small time chunks. Mm-hmm. You give them a time for how long something's going to take and keep it in those small chunks. I like to divide my 50-minute class periods into three segments mm-hmm. always. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that you also have to know your audience. Mm-hmm. A good entertainer, if you will, but I'll say a good teacher knows his or her audience and will speak to that audience, and you know that through connections you make and just getting to know every student and what they geek out about.
All right, so I want to pivot off that a little bit and say also knowing your audience means understanding kids these days, in air quotes, depending on what grade you're teaching. And you have really tapped into that because you understand the social media that they're watching too. Your TikToks aren't necessarily for kids. Mm-hmm. They're often for other teachers. But how important has it been for you to understand, as a social media influencer too, what are the trends? Mm-hmm. What are the things that are happening in this industry so that I can speak to them, be part of the conversation, be relevant, move it forward. And then we'll talk about what you need to know about the age group of your classroom, mm-hmm. because often it's like, what is this trend? I have no idea what it is. I'm guessing it would surprise you. So yeah. What does that bring up for you, Gabe?
I think it's so important as teachers to still be plugged in to what is hip and jive in society. Like, I know that's the most unhip way to say it, but you have to be plugged in a little bit. You have to be able to relate to your students. And as a middle school teacher, I relate to my students by being as cringy as possible. Mm-hmm. And like, one of the things that I'll do is I will use their slang words that they use, mm-hmm. and I'll just lay it on so thick and so cringy. And mm-hmm. it kind of gives you that, oh, no, don't say that, Mr. Danner, mm-hmm. type of reaction. Mm-hmm. But at least I'm getting a reaction out of them. They're engaged. They know what I just said. Mm-hmm. A lot of teachers, they don't know if the students are really listening to what they're saying. At least I know they're listening. So I think it's so important to stay engaged in what is hip and what is going on in their world so that you can relate to them. You're not gonna build a relationship with a student if you can't speak their language a little bit, mm-hmm. or you understand what their pressures are in their life at least a little bit.
No cap. He just ate.
So I want to be totally clear about this. You have more than 2 million followers, mm-hmm. and your kids still think you're a nerd?
Oh, yeah. They make fun of me all the time for stuff. All the time. It's so funny when I'll put out a video and they'll see, like, if a video bombs and it doesn't perform well, they'll be like, hey, I saw that video. It really bombed. Like, yeah, it did. Or I'll put out a video that gets millions of views and they'll come to class and say, I don't get it. I don't get why that video was so funny. And then we can have some friendly banter. But my videos are not for the kids. That's not my target demo. My target right. demo mm-hmm. are teachers. And I think most of my audience are 25 to 55-year-old people. Like, that's my audience, and I love that. That's mostly of who teachers are. It's they fit in that demographic.
I also love that you're willing to laugh at yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's such an important skill. I try to teach that to my students, too. Sometimes things bomb. You just got to be able to laugh at yourself sometimes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Teacher Talk is also a podcast. You can find it on your preferred podcast platform. And you can find all the companion blogs, including links to research on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk. We'll post more of this conversation on that podcast stream, and we'll bring you more with Gabe Dannenbring next week.
Boys, stop touching each other. It's literally on the board.
We're coming back after a quick break, but first here is Gabe Dannenbring on Instagram, warming up for back to school as a middle school teacher.
Even though I'm laughing, that's inappropriate. I'm not your bra.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Here's a little bit about what is breaking in the news today and what we've got coming up tomorrow. You may have heard that Vice President Kamala Harris has chosen Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate. The Democrat from Minnesota is known for pulling in conservative voters in his home state. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to welcome journalist Chris Vondracek. He's a South Dakota journalist and also now working for the Star Tribune. He's going to talk about a really wild 24 hours in Minnesota politics, and then we'll have our Dakota political junkies. John Hunter is with us, and also a new political junkie from the Black Hills area. You'll hear Murdoch tomorrow with the Dakota Town Hall podcast on our Dakota political junkies analysis as we look at the news and then also state politics, a new controversy, corruption case, embezzlement case. We'll talk about that. And then Murdoch's going to be out at Sturgis, of course. So he's going to take peek inside those T-shirt tents and get an idea of what's happening in American politics. All right. We are going to take a little moment for some music right now. You remember our conversation with Hank Harris, a well-known South Dakota musician. He has this new album called Beautiful Planet. Let's pause for a minute this Tuesday to just enjoy his song, Beautiful Planet. Here's Hank Harris.
Another failed New Year's. year's resolution. Another stupid move. Another phony. Another crony. Another dog and pony show. The word is out. We're not gonna make it. Too late to turn around. Another flim flam. Another con man telling us he's gonna save the world. We're just a big cliche.
That is a little bit of South Dakota musician Hank Harris. The song is called Beautiful Planet. Well, art starts conversations, and sometimes those conversations are easy and lovely, and sometimes they're difficult and challenging. And the difficult and challenging part of that conversation in art is part of the hope behind a new mural supported by the Sinew Project, which we have been talking about this week on In the Moment. Wade Medicine is the recipient for the Protect Our People Project, and he is with us now on the phone. Wade Medicine, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on this project and the funding from the Sinew Fund. Tell us a little bit about the mural, its location, and the process of putting it together.
The mural, the location is in Art Alley. It's on the 7th Street side. You'll see it say Protect Our People on there.
Yeah.
And the process of it was I made a proposal on the Sinew Fund, and it was 20 by 8 feet. So I had a lot of room to cover, and I didn't really have a lot of time. I was supposed to start on it in June, but I got late. But I still finished it in July, so it's, you know, 1 month off, but it's all right.
We'll allow it. Go ahead.
And it wasn't too hard. You know, I just in June I got all the paint ready. I just with the money I had, I put money aside for the paint or whatever, and I, you know, figured out what colors I wanted. Then I went and bought the paint. I bought a couple other stuff. I got a bench too, and, you know, art supplies and everything. I got everything I needed from the Sinew Fund. Yeah. And once I had it, I just had everything ready. Then, you know, one thing I knew I had to do was get the outline ready, which I used a projector. And what I did was I had the drawing already made up and everything like that. And I just scanned it in and I had it up. And once I had it up, I had to wait till night, and I was till 9 or whatever. And it was really hard it was really hard to do it too, because most of the business that in our alley, they support our alley and stuff like that. But like a lot of them don't really stay open till past 9. I mean, there is and stuff like that, but there's like in the area, there's like 2 stores that was close to, they were closed down.
Yeah.
Then there was another, but I got it worked out with one of the guys in the restaurants or whatever. He let me use it to get the outline up. So, you know, the outline didn't take me that long. That's all I really needed to do was use the power through the outline. So I waited till 9. Then he let me use the power. Then the sun went down and it was dark enough for me to project it. And I outlined everything. And it didn't take me that long. Maybe an hour and a half.
I love to get that part. I'm going to have to interrupt you just because we had a little problem getting Wade on the phone, and so we're going to cut you a little bit short of your time, but hopefully we can do more on this mural in the days head down at Art Alley, but do check it out. It's called Protect Our People. It's in downtown Rapid City, and the artist is Wade Medicin. Wade, thank you so much. I apologize for our technical problems. Hopefully we'll have more with you later.
Okay, yeah, and I have the reception this Saturday at 10:30. If you guys want to check it out, you're more than welcome to.
Perfect. Reception for that mural Saturday at 10:30. Wade Medicin, thank you so much. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. We thank you for listening.